Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, I hope I can get through all the news in just 1 hour this week. There's a lot of it, but I want to start. I feel a little giddy today, I must say. Feel a little giddy. Mostly it's lack of sleep. No, mostly it's because I got the band back together, you know, at church. We led worship at church this morning. Haven't done that in a few years. And whipped out the guitar, got my buddy the bass player to show up. And couldn't find a drummer, as usual. What's the deal with drummers? The most unreliable type of human being on the planet is a drummer. So we were not able to rustle up a drummer, but myself and the bass player... We didn't do too bad for a two-man gig, but I did get a blister on my ring finger, and that's annoying me. So if I seem a little bit annoyed during the show, that's because I've got a blister on my little finger. But we had a great time. And then also, I did the ritual, the spring ritual, of cleaning the winter filth out of the cars, out of the family cars today. And it's interesting how in one road trip to Phoenix, my three daughters were able to coat the back seat and the back floor of the car with an indistinguishable mishmash of food and other things. Candy, ice cream, Gatorade, corn nuts, sunflower seeds. Combo. Yeah, It was quite the mission, but mission accomplished. Not only did we accomplish the mission, the cars are sparkling clean now, but we're ready to deliver to you another hour of edification and maybe even entertainment as we move forward with the Worldview. Oh, by the way, it's Mother's Day, at least as we go to tape, or what do we go to these days? As we go to hard drive, it is Mother's Day, and my extremely attractive audio engineer spent her Mother's Day today taking care of a sick baby in true motherly fashion. And the sick baby is here with us in the studio. And at any moment, she could begin crying. What do you think, Lexi? How you feeling? You feeling good? She's looking a lot better. I think that Mother's Day with Mom did a lot of good. All right. But let's jump right into the news. This is a story that my extremely attractive audio engineer will be interested in. Dateline Phoenix, Arizona, from the Associated Press. Arizona is ending a groundbreaking and contentious program that puts speed cameras along Phoenix area freeways. Yes, it's over.
It's too big.
I wish they would have done this 3 weeks ago. Anyway, opponents have argued that the cameras are more about making money than about safety. And they certainly, well, they got their pound of flesh from us at $200 a pop. A non-renewal letter was sent by the Arizona Department of Public Safety this week to the private company that runs the program. So it's over. Scottsdale-based Redflex said last Thursday that the 36 fixed cameras will be turned off on July 16th. So it'll be safe for us to travel to Phoenix again after July 16th. The camera program was instituted by none other than Big Sis Janet Napolitano back when she was the governor in September of 2008. And they say it's been contentious. Do you know how contentious it's been? Listen to this. A passing motorist fatally shot a camera van operator doing paperwork in his marked vehicle back in April of 2009. Now, what I don't understand about this sentence is they say a passing motorist fatally shot a van operator. Couldn't they say that a passing motorist murdered a camera van operator? I don't know. I guess you could say he fatally shot him. It just seems odd to me. But then again, I'm feeling a little bit giddy. Janet Napolitano, back in the day, she estimated that the program would bring in $90 million in revenue in its first year, but actual revenue fell far short, as many motorists simply ignored the notices received in the mail. So she fit right into the Barack Hussein Obama administration, where they overpromise and underdeliver. It's a way of life in the Barry Ho administration. All right. Now on to more serious news. Dateline Detroit, Michigan. Federal authorities touted the arrest of 9 members of a Michigan militia as a preemptive strike against homegrown terrorists. You remember that? When they arrested the Hootery militia up there in Michigan? They said that the suspects had, quote, dark hearts with evil intent. That's what the government said. They actually used the word evil, if you can believe that. And they say the Hootery wanted to go to war against the government. You remember all this, right? Well, 5 weeks later, a judge has ordered these dark-hearted, evil rebel militia members, he's ordered them released until trial, and he's frankly said that the government's case is a little bit shaky against the Hootery. During 2 days of hearings, according to the Associated Press, prosecutors tried to show how dangerous the Hootery militia was by playing secretly recorded conversations. The trouble was, those conversations revealed no plot. let's see. Now, the Hootery, you'll remember, were charged with a seditious conspiracy and attempted use of weapons of mass destruction. Yeah, that's the Hootery. Now, don't get me wrong. The Hootery militia, I mean, they very well could be a bunch of morons. You might even call them rednecks. I don't know. They run around in the woods with AK-47s. Not really my style. They may even be Christians. I think they are Christians, you know. But dark hearts with evil intent? Indeed. Sounds more like Janet Napolitano to me. Anyway, so the Hootery goes free, except if I think I read in the story that they're being secured by electronic tethers and curfews. An electronic tether. That's interesting. Is that, they set up some high-frequency wires around their house so that if they step out, they get shocked in the neck or something? Not sure how all that works, but anyway, the Hootery are free. And so Michigan, obviously, is in danger. All right. Let's jump into the justice file. That was the justice file. But more from the justice file, DNA tests have vindicated a man convicted of rape in Ohio. Listen to this. An Ohio man is free for the first time in nearly 30 years after DNA showed he did not assault an 11-year-old girl, and a judge vacated the conviction. The gentleman's name is Raymond Towler, 52 years old. Was released after 30 years in prison. Towler had been serving a life sentence for the assault of a girl in a Cleveland park back in 1981. The Ohio Innocence Project says Towler is the second longest incarcerated person to be exonerated by DNA in U.S. history. Now, you all know my position, if you've listened to the broadcast, on the Innocence Project and Barry Shuckenjive Sheck and all of those guys. I'm not a big fan, but perhaps this guy was not guilty of this crime. I'm willing to give him that. And here's why. Because in Ohio in 1981, there were about 3,300 rapes. 1981, 3,300 rapes. Now, how many days are there in a year? There's 365. So that's almost 10 rapes every single day being reported to law enforcement in Ohio. 10 a day. So is it possible that law enforcement is simply overwhelmed by the crime epidemic and that mistakes are made? I'm willing to grant that that is a possibility, and it may have happened in this case. There's simply an avalanche of reported crimes coming into law enforcement, and it's certainly possible that a mistake was made. Barry Shuckenjive Sheck aside. By the way, if you're keeping score in Ohio, there has been a 10% population increase since 1981. The population in Ohio has gone from about 10 million to about 11 million in the great state of Ohio. That's a 10% population increase, but there has been a 30% increase in rapes reported to law enforcement. A 30% increase. So the crime epidemic continues, and it's a shame to see the criminal justice system working to the tattered edges and justice not being done or justice being miscarried due to a lack of manpower and a justice system simply overwhelmed. It's just disturbing. All right, more from the justice file. As if that were not disturbing enough. Dateline New York City from CNN. A man who wrote about his life as a career criminal in his autobiography has now confessed to a 33-year-old double homicide. Edward Edwards, a 76-year-old murderer living on the tax dollars and the goodwill and kindness of the people of the great state of New York, who is awaiting trial on murder charges in a separate case in Wisconsin, admitted killing a young Ohio couple in 1977. Ohio again. Edwards said he killed William Lovaco, 21 years old, and Judith Straub, 18. Their bodies were found on August 8, 1977. The couple had been shot point blank in the neck with a 20-gauge shotgun. Jeff Straub, the brother of Judith Straub, one of the victims, who was 9 years old when his sister was killed, he said, after the first 10 years, it was very improbable that there was ever going to be any justice in this case, but I never completely gave up hope for the sake of my sister. Well, Jeff, you should probably give up hope for justice on this earth and in the great state of Ohio. Because the justice, I mean, here's a guy, he's already convicted of murder. He's been allowed to live till he's 76 years old. He wrote an autobiography. He's on trial for another murder. And now he admits to killing your sister. It's doubtful you're ever going to find justice here or in Ohio. But don't give up hope, Jeff, because in eternity, you absolutely will find justice. In the case of Jesus Christ versus Edwin W. Edwards. I am Doug McBurney, and we are deep in the justice file. It always makes me feel good to hear that song and imagine a fellow like Edward Edwards on Judgment Day. I hope the Lord will allow us to play that song when Edward is judged. Anyway, we shall see. I don't know. He may have better tunes up there. Probably does. All right. Let's move on through the justice file. One more disturbing case from the justice file from Houston, Texas, and the Associated Press. Chanton Jenkins of Houston has pleaded guilty to 5 counts of intoxication manslaughter. Have you ever heard of that one? Intoxication manslaughter? I guess that means you were too drunk to murder someone, but you killed them. I don't know what that means. But Chanton Jenkins has pleaded guilty to 5 counts of intoxication manslaughter. Police say Jenkins was driving drunk and using his cell phone on the afternoon of April 18th, 2009, when he lost control of his car, which was carrying 7 passengers. The vehicle veered off the road into a rain-swollen ditch. 5 children drowned, including 3 of Jenkins' own children. The dead Devin Jenkins, 4 years old, Hallie Jenkins, also 4, Carrington Jenkins, 1 year old, and brothers Trenton Thompson, 11, and Malik Brown, 7 years old. Last Monday in court, Jenkins claimed he had consumed alcohol, but only a cup of brandy with a Coke. And he said it was the rain that caused the crash. Jenkins had a blood alcohol content of 0.12 at the time of the accident. He also had PCP and marijuana in his system. And he was driving seven kids around. Unbelievable. Anyway, intoxication manslaughter, in case you're interested in worthless trivia, intoxication manslaughter has a maximum sentence of up to 20 years, but because Jenkins has a previous felony conviction, he could face life. Now, the passengers, the five passengers in his vehicle that day, will not face life, but Jenkins may. Intoxication manslaughter, indeed. You want to prevent people from driving drunk? Execute this bastard. Quickly and painfully. You know how many drunk driving incidents that would prevent? How can we not all agree that some people, some crimes, are worthy of a swift and painful death penalty? How is it that we cannot all agree on that? I don't understand. It would seem to me even the lowest of the low and the stupidest of the stupid would realize that we simply can't tolerate certain behavior. For example, taking an innocent life. Simply cannot be tolerated. Kidnapping and assaulting a child. Not to be tolerated. I mean, even if you're an evolutionist, wouldn't you agree that we should eliminate them from the gene pool? I mean, even on a basis of just pure rational humanism. You idiots. Are you humanists that stupid that you're willing to tolerate your own murder? Because eventually they're going to come and get you. Eventually. All right. Speaking of coming to get you, let's delve into the war file. From Tehran, Iran, Ahmad Khatami, a conservative hardliner in the Iranian clerical establishment, warned the Western powers that Iran could, quote, endanger your entire world, unquote, in any future confrontation. In regard to the nuclear issue, you should regard the nuclearization of Iran as a bygone fact. By God's grace, Iran has entered the world country's nuclear club. That's what he said in a sermon. A sermon broadcast on live state radio. The United States and Israel, according to Reuters, Iran's arch foes, have not ruled out military action if diplomacy fails to resolve the row over Iran's nuclear ambitions. Do you get this, how Reuters reports this? The United States and Israel, Iran's arch foes, as if this is a 007 novel, and the United States and Israel are just as nefarious as the mullahs and the madmen over there in Tehran. It's just bizarre, Reuters. I mean, who's writing for you? I mean, who's writing for you, Reuters? Who's writing for you, Reuters? What's going on here? It's just weird. Addressing the West, Khatami said, if you should want to stand up against this religious Islamic system, you would be standing up against the religion of God. And if you should want to confront our religion, we will endanger your entire world. Yeah, that was Ahmad Khatami. How many hams are there? Oh, Ahmad, H-M. Anytime I see an H-M in an Arab's name, or a Persian's, or a Muslim's, I should just say, I always think of Ham from the Bible. You remember Ham, Shem, and Japheth, the three sons of Noah, who populated the entire earth? Anyway, the Persians, the Arabs, they come from the line of Ham. And they're all like, they all have Ham in the middle of their name. My pastor pointed that out because he's brilliant. And so I'm stealing a bit of his material, but it's okay because we lift all of our stuff from the same book anyways. All right, now, or at least I try. Let's see, in his May 3rd speech at UN headquarters in New York, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad urged the United Nations to punish countries like the United States that threaten to use nuclear arms, even though Barry Ho last month said, we won't use them, you know. I mean, basically, unless we're nuked first, I think. I forget how exactly Barry put it. But Mahmoud is not ameliorated in any way. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton dismissed Ahmadinejad's comments as, quote, the same tired, false, sometimes wild accusations that he always makes, unquote. And she urged nations to focus on efforts to bring Iran to heel over its nuclear program. Indeed, Hill. Let's all bring Iran to heel. Maybe if we snap our fingers and say, down, boy, down. Maybe if we say, sit, no, heel. Mahmoud, heel, no. Bring him to heel, Hillary.
She's got the ham, too.
That's right. She's got the rod ham. She can offer. Oh, you're talking about her calves. Let's not go there. That's not necessary, is it? I mean, really. You are incorrigible. All right. Let's move on. Do we have more from the war file? More on Israel. From Jerusalem. From the French press agency. A top Israeli intelligence officer said last Tuesday that Syria's government routinely ships weapons to Lebanon's Shiite militia Hezbollah in an operation that goes well beyond sporadic smuggling. That's right, the Israeli intelligence officer basically accusing Syria of systematically supplying Hezbollah with weapons, specifically rockets, missiles. The head of military intelligence research department, Brigadier General Yossi Baydatz, told a parliamentary committee that Hezbollah's arsenal now includes thousands of rockets of all ranges and types, some solid-fueled. So for those of you who are uninitiated in the audience, solid-fuel rockets go very, very far. Very far. So there's something to be afraid of, especially in the hands of Hezbollah. Let's see, what else do we have here? Weapons are sent to Hezbollah from Syria on a regular basis, under the direction of the Syrian and the Iranian regimes, according to this intelligence official. Hezbollah, according to the French press agency, has not confirmed or denied the Scud allegations, saying only that it has the right to possess any weapon it chooses. Well, so I guess that's a play on Israel, who has never confirmed or denied they have nuclear weapons, but say they have the right to possess any weapon that they so desire. And in the civilized community of nations, indeed, every civilized nation does have a right to possess any weapon it so chooses or desires. But Hezbollah is not a part of the civilized community of nations. They're a terrorist militia, hell-bent on wiping Israel off the face of the map, and as many Jews with it as possible. So Hezbollah does not have a right to possess any weapon it chooses. And, well, I don't know if anyone's going to enforce the fact that Hezbollah does not have that right. But we shall see. I mean, the Jews, frankly, in my opinion, lost their last war against Hezbollah. And perhaps the next one's going to go even worse. It's kind of disconcerting, frankly. Last Monday, according to the AFP, President Barack Hussein Obama renewed U.S. sanctions on Syria. Well, good for you, Barry. Hillary Clinton warned Syrian President Bashar al-Assad about the risks of sparking a regional war. Bashar, don't you realize the risks of sparking a regional war? Hillary said. To which Bashar said, yes, of course I understand. Of course, Hillary, please. Of course they understand, Hillary, you ignorant Secretary of State. Yes, they understand perfectly, Hillary. You're the one who's a bit dim. All right. Now, quickly from the domestic tranquility file back fair shores of America, From Rialto, California, the Associated Press, 48-year-old Sandra Lee Kotz was found armed before dawn last Sunday sitting on a curb near her car. The body of her sister-in-law was found inside. Police say she's a homeless woman, and she fatally shot her sister-in-law and then drove around the neighborhood for hours with the body in the victim's car. Kotz was booked for investigation of murder. A good old-fashioned murder here, I suppose, in the death of 58-year-old Ellen Ann Bayless. Bayless was divorced from Kotz's brother. And there's the state of domestic tranquility in Rialto, California. The interesting thing there is that that law enforcement has only charged Sandra Lee Kotz with murder. No other extraneous and interesting and creative charges there. Just murder. And certainly if she's guilty, well, we hope she's convicted. Now, on into the domestic tranquility file. From Los Angeles, California, the Associated Press, Layla Trawick was arrested by an off-duty sheriff's deputy at the West Hollywood Target store last Monday. She ran along aisles, slashing customers at random with a knife, including stabbing one woman in the neck. The woman who was stabbed in the neck was carrying a baby. Now, all the victims who were stabbed or slashed are expected to survive. Trawick's half-brother, Tim Helton, said it was out of character for his sister to be violent, but she had long suffered from mental problems exacerbated after she divorced about 5 years ago and lost custody of her son. No-fault divorce, they call it. No fault. No one's at fault. Trawick comes from a complicated family background. This is interesting how the Associated Press chooses to express this complicated family background. Listen to this. Her father had 7 children with 6 different women. And anyway, the story of her life is, well, I mean, one could say complicated. But if one wanted to be honest and really communicate the depth of suffering that her family has been exposed to because of the wickedness and the selfishness of her father, they would say that she came from a shameful background, a shameful family background. When a man sires 7 children with 6 different women and takes responsibility for none of them, and his children end up broken and mentally damaged, spiritually damaged, it's not complicated. It's shameful. It's evil. It's wicked. It's selfish. It's sin. Oh, did I say sin? The Associated Press doesn't even know how to spell sin. Feel like I'm And we are rounding second, and this is the Weekly Worldview. I'm so glad to have you with us, and I'm so glad to be out of the domestic tranquility file. The justice file and the domestic tranquility file are about enough to make one want to flee the country. Just tough to take. I mean, it's just hard to take. Now, let's jump into the culture file, because while the culture is deteriorating right before our eyes, and the nation that our forefathers bled and died for is basically being squandered by a bunch of self-absorbed ex-hippie types who are running the government and, more importantly, running the churches. That's right, I said the churches. I mentioned I was reading Bonhoeffer. The state of the church in Germany and the state of the church in America today is it's a very interesting parallel to observe. And I think I forgot to put up a link last week to the book. But just go to Google and Google it. Bonhoeffer by Eric Metaxas. M-A-T-A-X-A-S. Eric Metaxas. Great book. Anyway, the hippies and the politically correct crowd, the humanists, basically, let's just call a spade a spade. The humanists are running the church, and the church is no longer preaching the gospel. The church is no longer preaching a masculine Jesus Christ, a creator, a judge, a warrior, a king, and, if you'll humble yourself before him, your best friend who will lay his life down for you. The church is no longer preaching that Jesus Christ. The church has been, let's just say they've left their first love. And they've gone into the arms of the IRS. I know that it's difficult to pastor a church. It's a tremendous responsibility. I imagine it's difficult. I know it's a tremendous responsibility. I myself would be keenly concerned about mishandling the Word of God, about misleading or misstating. You know, it's a tremendous step of faith for a man to lead a church if that man is actually qualified. And it's like I tell my daughter, who's 8 years old, whenever you pick up a book that says it's telling you about the Bible, you can safely assume that whoever wrote it doesn't know what they're talking about. And if you ever go into a church and someone's preaching, assume that they have no idea what they're talking about. Don't believe a word they say. Check it out. Because 90, do I say 90% or should I say, I want to be honest, 95% of the pastors in the pulpit today are unqualified to be there and in fact are doing more harm than good. I know it's a broad brush accusation, but having worked in the personhood movement out here in Colorado and with 3,500 churches in the state and just about 10% of them allowing the pro-life people to come in and try to change the law to outlaw the well-regulated murder of innocent Americans. That's all we're trying to do. You know, God admonished us that we should protect the weak and the voiceless. And it would seem the most fundamental of Christian exercises. But just a little over 10% of the churches even let us in. And some of those, I mean, you just had to see the looks on their faces when you actually stood up and asked the people in the church to sign up to say that they were against the regulated murder of Americans. Under color of law, advocated by the government as a right. So, it's the problem is with the church. The problem stems from the church, and it has metastasized into the culture, into the universities, into the government. But the problem is a spiritual problem, and the problem is in the pulpit. And the pulpit will be cleansed. It will be. I mean, the Lutherans in Germany who would not allow Bonhoeffer to speak in their churches and to their congregations against the Nazification of the Lutheran church, those Lutherans who said, you can't come into my church and say these things because if you do, you know, the membership and the finances, I mean, you could destroy the church. And just a few short years later, those Lutheran church buildings were literally blown to bits. Those churches were destroyed. But it wasn't because Bonhoeffer came in and preached against the Nazification of the Lutheran church. Those churches were destroyed because the pulpit will be cleansed, and it doesn't take an act of God to cleanse the pulpit. When a people rejects their Creator and His law, and turns their face against him and raises their fist against the Creator, it doesn't take an act of God or a miracle to destroy that people. The spirit of those people degenerates to the point where another nation will come and will destroy them. And God doesn't have to raise that nation up or inspire that nation. It's the way of history, if one cares to read it. Now, I've gotten off the topic here. I wanted to get into the culture file for some lighter stuff. And so I apologize. I digress. Let me try to get back into the news of the day. Did I ever make a point with all that? Or was I just rambling? Ah, yes. The point is, the problem is with the preachers in the pulpit. And the government is really just a symptom. Case in point, Dateline Washington, D.C., from the Associated Press, the D.C. City Council has passed a measure to legalize medical marijuana, sending the bill to Washington Mayor Adrian Fenty. So they passed a bill to legalize. Under the measure, the nation's capital would join 14 states that allow medical marijuana. I was driving today to church, and I drove past the first, to my knowledge, that I've ever seen, my first medical marijuana dispensary. It's in a former chicken joint. It used to be a chicken joint next to a 7-Eleven. It now has a, it's all painted Rasta green, and it's got a huge marijuana leaf on the front of it. And I couldn't help but think that I'm in a bizarro world. I'm driving down Federal Boulevard in Denver, Colorado, where I've driven up and down for the better part of 20 years. And there's a marijuana store. Anyway, it just struck me as bizarre. And I had my kids in the car. Thankfully, they were nodding off. But it's just a matter of time before they ask, what's that, Daddy? And Daddy's got to explain that. There's so many things I don't want to ever have to explain to my kids, but I know I'm going to have to. Anyway, back to D.C. Let's see. So why has D.C. passed the medical marijuana legalization bill? Patients with chronic illnesses. Yes, of course. How bigoted of me. I should have realized that it's really about chronic illnesses, you know, like AIDS or cancer or bosses who just don't get it, dude. All those chronic diseases. We've got, here in Colorado, we have tens of thousands of young men between the ages of 18 and 40 who have suddenly developed chronic illnesses here and have applied for their medical marijuana cards. It's amazing. Since medical marijuana became legal in Colorado, Colorado has been stricken with a plague greater than the Black Plague back in the Middle Ages. I'm surprised that the state can still function with this rash of chronic disease that has suddenly just like lightning shot through the young male population here in Colorado. It's a terrifying medical condition. Let's see. Patients would be limited to 2 ounces of marijuana per month. Now, those of you in the audience who are not familiar with the consumption of marijuana, let me just tell you, 2 ounces of marijuana a month, that's a lot of dope. I mean, if you smoke 2 ounces of marijuana in 1 month, you would have to be stoned all the time. All the time. Unbelievable. These poor chronic disease sufferers. It's just sad. Now, how many other diseases do you buy enough? Do you buy like a barrel full of medicine and just take it all the time? I mean, anyway. Let's get off of that. More from the culture file. From CNN in New York, a Picasso painting fetched nearly $107 million at auction last Tuesday, and that's a record for any single work of art. The Picasso painting was titled Nude Green Leaves and Bust, and it sold for $106,482,500. Now, have you seen this? Have you seen this painting, my dear? This Picasso? I mean, I mean, my 8-year-old has some stuff hanging in her room that would certainly rival nude green leaves and bust. My, what a remarkable piece of art! Let me give $100 million so I can have it in my personal collection. My dear, I simply must have it. Picasso. I mean, have you seen his stuff? Some of his early stuff, you know, it was all right, but I don't know. I think he was into medical marijuana later in his life. Anyway, $106 million that could have gone towards so many noble endeavors has been squandered by some ignorant rich moron for a Picasso painting that looks like, I mean, it looks like he stumbled out of a bar back to his apartment and just whipped something together. Ah, it's a Picasso. All right. Starbucks is being sued, according to Reuters, more from the culture file. They're being sued by a customer who allegedly suffered second-degree burns after being served tea that was too hot. Now, many in the audience may not be familiar with medical terminology, but let me tell you something about second-degree burns. Number one, they leave no scar. And number two, they heal relatively quickly. So here we have someone who's received second, and they report this as if second-degree burns are some just, I mean, it's like a sunburn, okay? Anyway, according to the complaint, the plaintiff, a Zeynep İnanlı, that's the person's name. How am I supposed to read the news anymore in this country? Zeynep İnanlı. That's the person's name. I mean, that sounds like a brand of lighter that you'd buy in Taipei, a Zeynep. Anyway, I shouldn't make fun of people's names. I guess you're stuck with the name you got. So anyway, the Zeynep İnanlı, what are the odds Zeynep was born here? Anyway, Zeynep was served tea that, I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, for crying out loud. How am I supposed to read this story? Zeynep says the tea was unreasonably hot, and on top of that, it was in containers that were not safe. And he, she, or it, we don't know what this person is, bought the Starbucks at the Starbucks on 3rd Avenue in Manhattan, as opposed to the Starbucks on 1st Avenue, 2nd Avenue, 4th Avenue, 5th Street, 1st Street, Avenue of the Americas. And Lexington. Anyway, as a result of Starbucks' negligence, the lawyer says his client suffered, quote, great physical pain and mental anguish. Mental anguish from second. Spilled tea in your lap. Get over it. You think this is a woman? It doesn't say.
Tea drinkers are
now that might be considered sexist, yeah, to say that tea drinkers. The story never identifies if Zeynep İnanlı is a boy or a girl, and I suppose it doesn't matter. All we know is that she was horribly disfigured by this tea that she spilled in her lap. Anyway, so the insanity, you remember the McDonald's thing, right? It's not over. It's just getting worse. It's crazy. All right. More from the culture file. Quickly, some parents of students at Live Oak High School in Morgan Hill kept their kids out of school after tensions related to an incident involving students wearing an American flag shirt on Cinco de Mayo. You all heard, if you listen to the conservative idiots on the radio, all the limbots out there, they towed the line on this story to a T. Here's a bunch of fine American upstanding patriotic youth wearing their T-shirts to school, and these politically correct teachers on Cinco de Mayo, they threw these fine American boys out. You're a great American. No, you're a great American. No, you're a great American. These boys are great Americans. No, no, you're a great American. Anyway, some parents now, they kept their kids home from school because of all the tensions there at the school, and I applaud these parents. This is a step in the right direction. There's nothing you can do better for your high school student than to keep them home from high school for any reason. Whether they're Mexican or white or black or yellow or brown or anything.
Now the school district, according to NBC, now the school district is sending a message to parents about the heated issue, assuring them that students will not be suspended and that the students are allowed to wear patriotic clothing. Please, please send your kids back to our school. We don't want to lose our federal funding. We need your kids at our school. We've got to corrupt their spirits and their souls. We've got to turn them against you. And we want to have sex with them. And we want them to have abortions. Please, please, please don't let this little ruckus keep your patriotic boys from our socialist indoctrination center. All right, we're rounding third and headed for home, and we're running out of time. I got a lot of news to get to, so you're going to have to listen quick. Last point on that last story, get your kids out of the public schools. If you send your children to public school, I don't really care what your excuse is. You're sinning against your child, and you're sinning against God if you send your child to the public schools. Whether they wear Cinco de Mayo shirts or Mexican flag shirts or American flag shirts, it doesn't matter. Get them out. All right. Now, on through the culture file. Boston, Massachusetts, from the Associated Press, Governor Deval Patrick has signed a bill cracking down on school bullies and requiring teachers to report bullying to principals. Deval, the governor there, signed the bill last Monday. It had been passed after the suicides of two students who were said to be victims of intense harassment. Carl Walker Hoover, a young student, a high school student there in the public school factory in Boston area, hanged himself at home last year. He said he had been tormented by classmates. In January, 15-year-old Phoebe Prince killed herself after being bullied at South Hadley High School. The new law won't really help any of this, but it prohibits bullying on school property and outlaws cyberbullying. That's great. So you've got a social crisis of children tormenting one another to the point of suicide, and you pass a law. Passing a law doesn't help with this stuff. These problems are solved from the pulpit, my friend, and nowhere else. You're not going to solve them from the state house, Deval. Morons, idiots. Get your kids out of the public schools. All right. More from the culture file from the Daily Mail in London. The Pew Research Center has found that women in the United States are having children later, and fewer of them are married. Are any of you shocked? No, you're not shocked. The demography of motherhood in the U.S., according to the Pew Research Center, has shifted strikingly in the past two decades. A notable change was the rise in births to unmarried women. A record 41% of all births in the United States were to unmarried women, up from 28%. In 1990. Now, is an unmarried woman having a baby, is that a bad thing? Well, it's not as bad as killing the baby, but it's not a good thing. It's not the optimum thing. It should be frowned upon, and there should be shame. There should be some shame in not only and most of the shame is with the father who doesn't marry the woman. I mean, what kind of man are you? You father a child with a woman, and then you don't take responsibility to father that child in a two-parent home the way it's supposed to be done. So there should be some shame, and it should primarily be upon fathers who don't take responsibility. Unless you're one of those Hollywood slut types who just decides you're going to have a bunch of kids and you don't want a man. Then you should be ashamed of yourself. Anyway... 41% of all births were to unmarried women, up from 28% in 1990. So in 20 years, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, this is not a good trend. Mothers are better educated than they were two decades ago, proving that it's not all about knowledge, right? Knowledge doesn't necessarily help. In 2006, more than half the mothers of newborns had some college education. So the modern day unmarried mother is not a poor, uneducated inner city woman. They're women who've been used by men. They're women who are too immature to have a real relationship with a real man and raise a real family. And the men are too immature and stupid and terminally adolescent too terminally adolescent to actually be a father and to step up to the plate and be a man. Attitudes have also altered in the past 20 years, according to the center, as the stigma of unmarried parenthood has softened. Softened? There's no stigma anymore. And the report concludes that two is still the ideal number of children in a family for many Americans, and that hasn't changed since the 70s. So since the 70s, America, you've barely been replacing yourselves. What a bunch of slackers. Just pathetic. Two kids. Not that having two kids is bad. I think it's great. But four is better, and five is great, and six is even better. And if you have more than six, I mean, you are a real man and a real woman. Especially if you stay together. I mean, that's impressive. It's way more impressive than winning at, what's the video game called? Rockstar? No. Guitar Hero. It's way more impressive than winning at Guitar Hero. All right. More from the Culture File. Over in Italy, as Italy teeters on the brink of financial bankruptcy, spiritual bankruptcy has already descended upon Italy. In Milan, from Reuters, Italy has held its first divorce fair, offering services such as life coaching and beauty advice to the booming number of separating couples. The fair was held this past weekend. It was intended to help divorcing people start a new, happier life. So that's the lie right there, that getting a divorce is going to make you happier. That's a lie. Getting a divorce is going to make you feel like a failure, okay? That's what getting a divorce... Divorce is failure. And no matter how many people tell you and how many sociologists and the culture reinforces to you that if you get divorced, you'll be free and you'll be happy and you'll be able to date, hang out at the bars again and be free, you're going to be a failure. Both of you, by the way. I don't want to do any more on that. It's official. According to the Daily Mail from London, Cher's daughter, Chastity, is now a son. Chaz. Cher's offspring is officially a man after he changed his name and gender in court this past week. Bono, that's a Freudian slip. Bono, who was born a girl named Chastity, ironically enough, is now legally recognized as a male a year after undergoing I don't even want to get into what that all was all about. Christina Wirtz of the Transgender Law Center, who represented Bono in court, says Chaz couldn't be happier. Chaz is so happy. I mean, can you look at her? Sure, she's ballooned up to 325 pounds, but she couldn't be happier. It's the hormones. She's so happy. I mean, she's practically falling all over herself. She's so happy. And I'm so happy to be her lawyer and help her. It's just, we're all so happy for Chaz. This is an important step in his transition, and it'll allow him to change a variety of his identity documents to show who he truly is. He's truly, truly a boy. Yeah, so happy. Bono started undergoing gender reassignment surgery in March of 2009, soon after turning 40 years of age. In an interview last year, Chaz said, undergoing the surgery was, quote, the best decision I ever made, at which point all the transgender lawyers and freaks and promoters of that lifestyle huddled around Chaz and said, be happy, Chaz, we're so happy for you, we're happy for us, we're happy for everyone. Chastity Bono says that she feels so much more comfortable than I've ever been. She said, I've felt male as far back as I can remember. She says, life is short and life is precious. This is who I am. I need to finally be who I am. Chastity, just a note of advice. Life is not short. I mean, we dwell on this earthly plane for a relatively short period of time indeed, but your existence, your eternal existence is not short, Chaz. And did I say Chaz? I don't want to call you Chaz. I want to call you Chastity. Because you're really Chastity. That's who you really are. You're Chastity Bono, the daughter of Sonny and Cher. And it doesn't matter how many hormones you have injected into you. It doesn't matter how many body parts you have removed or added. You're Chastity. And you will be Chastity for eternity. And eternity is not short, Chastity. And you will be who you really are for eternity. Chastity, if you rebel against your Creator to the point where you're willing to surgically and chemically alter your very physical being, well, that rebellion will not be looked kindly upon in eternity, Chastity. So you need to get back to who you really are. Hopefully someone gets through to Chastity, because that's a sad story. But her gender lawyer is very happy. Very happy. Hugo Chavez, number one on Twitter. I don't care. Hillary Clinton at the United Nations from the Associated Press. Hillary Clinton said last week that the Barry Ho administration will disclose the number of weapons in its nuclear arsenal, which has been a closely guarded secret for more than half a century, but it's a secret no more. They'll probably put it up on Hillary's new Twitter account to try to counter the popularity of Hugo Chavez. Already, well, let's go back here to the Hugo Chavez story. Maybe I do care. After Hugo Chavez signed up for Twitter and became number one with over 200,000 followers, U.S. State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley started up his Twitter account. He said, you know, with Chavez on Twitter, how could I resist? So the State Department spokesmoron signs up for Twitter because of Chavez, and this will probably be his first Twitter post, is the number of nuclear warheads in our arsenal. Oh, and listen to this, more from Hillary over at the UN. She says that telling everyone how many bombs we have, that's aimed at improving transparency in the nuclear disarmament regime. That they have a regime that they've decided to go by, where they're gonna disarm the United States of America. She said, beginning today, the United States will make public the number of nuclear weapons in our stockpile and the number of weapons we have dismantled since 1991. So for those who doubt that the United States will do its part on disarmament, this is our record. These are our commitments, and they send a clear, unmistakable signal that America's political leadership, including myself, are all on psychotropic medication. And the crowd went wild. Clinton also said that the administration would contribute $50 million to a fund run by the un-nuclear watchdog. At which point someone tapped Hillary on the shoulder and said, Hillary, the administration doesn't have $50 million. In fact, not even the Treasury doesn't have $50 million. We don't actually have any money, Hillary. And Hillary said, well, that never stopped us before. Give me some more Xanax. And then they issued some bonds to the Chinese, borrow the $50 million, tell everybody how many nukes we've got, and the country basically falls to the level of a third world banana republic. And there you have it. All right. Boy, I got some personhood news that I really wanted to get to. Let's get to this one story, this one blog that I answered on personhood. This is from archny.org. I have no idea who these people are, but basically it's a Catholic. Seems like it's a Catholic who's like supposed to be way up there. I don't know, some Catholic guy, right? He says, in a number of states, pro-lifers are sponsoring what they call personhood initiatives that they claim will overturn Roe v. Wade and grant legal protection to the unborn. Unfortunately, this is a well-intentioned but legally and tactically misguided strategy. Because, this blogger says, he says, because the federal constitution is the supreme law of the land, the Supreme Court's rulings on abortion override all state laws or constitutions. Congress cannot overrule a Supreme Court decision, nor can a Supreme Court decision interpreting the federal constitution be overruled by the state constitutional amendments or legislation. So it's as if our hands are shackled by the Supreme Court. And literally, if the Supreme Court decided to legalize whipping black men in the public square, we would all be helpless to do anything about it. The Supreme Court, it's as if the Supreme Court handed the stone tablets to Moses. And there's simply nothing we can do, according to this distinguished Catholic leader. He says, as a result, of these of personhood bills. Oh, he says, as a result of this political reality, the bills like the Sanctity of Human Life Act, Personhood Amendments, the Life at Conception Act simply cannot accomplish what their sponsors desire. They cannot overturn Roe versus Wade simply by defining an unborn child as a person. So I responded, I said, Ed, the guy's name was Ed. I said, the intent of the personhood movement is not to overturn Roe, nor to introduce a case with the hopes of doing so, nor to challenge the constitutionality of the ruling of the Supreme Court that abortion, murdering children, is a constitutional right. We intend to elevate social tension and someday provoke a confrontation, Ed, between a pro-personhood state governor who will assert that the God-given right to life cannot be abridged by any governmental authority. This is a battle we are called to provoke. The innocent blood, Ed, cries out for justice. Sadly, Ed, your generation appears to be slaves to the idea that we simply can't end the murder of children legally. Our generation, Ed, our generation has realized that regulating the murder of children is wrong. And in many cases, the state and local regulations that have been put into place by so-called pro-lifers like you, Ed, are more solid pro-abortion law than Roe itself. Do you not realize this now? That it has been plainly pointed out to you, Ed. The time has come for abortion regulators to step aside and let a new generation, a generation without fear, into the land. Ed, just get out. All right. Finally, from Fairmont, Michigan, from the Associated Press, authorities say a southern Minnesota man was drunk when he allegedly went into a barn and stabbed 29 pigs. 23-year-old Curtis Lee Adams of Winnebago, faces burglary, cruelty to animals, and other charges in the incident at the Weichmann Pig Hog Barn. All 29 pigs, sadly enough, had to be euthanized. Authorities say that the accused had blood on his knuckles and smelled of pigs and pig manure when he was found in the barn early on April 27th. According to authorities, he told a deputy he could remember drinking at a bar and falling asleep in his truck and then talking to police. He doesn't remember anything about stabbing 29 pigs. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, what more can you say about that? Obviously need to let the guy go, right? I wonder if you're able to, when you euthanize a pig, can you still... Can you still send them down to the local restaurant and get some pork chops out of them? I don't know. All right, that's the Weekly Worldview for the week. I'll be back next week. Until then, we thank KGov, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Theology Online, and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.